If you eat, sleep, and breathe golf...
Sounds like my kind of guy.
Love to explore...
All right, here's what you do. You're going to call your PR guy on the phone, tell him I'm here to see him.
And most importantly, just want to have some fun...
Looks like we got ourselves an orgy here.
Well, welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren.
Don't you think this is starting to get just a little big for the two of us to handle?
Here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence.
I don't know how much you know about journalism, but... First rule of thumb is don't ever ask a question that you don't want an answer to.
And the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
It's not his fault. He's just trying not to lose his job.
Welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. Glad you found us wherever you consume your podcasting content on Apple, Audio Boom, or as always on the Golf Trip Experts website at golftripx.com. Our usual stellar threesome is today a stellar twosome. I'm Mitch Lawrence with our esteemed audio pilot and co-producer Chris McHugh, and Darren is off gallivanting somewhere in search of great golf and milkshakes. Hopefully, Chris, we can get him back sometime, somewhere, somehow. He goes into these places where I think he really doesn't want us to know where he's finding the milkshakes.
It's true.
That's really true.
But that we're going to do. He can be like a milkshake hipster.
Well, he already is that. Right. He's got milkshake holsters and stuff. Right. So, but you can find us all on the socials, me at Mitch Lawrence, Darren at Golf Getaways, and Chris at Chris McEwen. And of course, if you're not listening to Chris's great pod, Golf Origin Stories, as well as the fabulous That Range Life, the episodes on YouTube, you are missing out. I highly suggest you seek professional help. Chris, this is going to be an interesting recording session that we have today. As you know, Darren and I are both hickory golfers and love the history of the game and collecting and that kind of stuff. And we're going to be lucky to have once again Dr. Bern Bernacki with us from Pittsburgh today to talk about the Golf Heritage Society. He's the president, and an exciting event that's coming up very soon, and give us some great classic golf courses that we all can get on, public places that we can play that maybe people aren't tuned into. So I'm really looking forward to Dr. Bern. You've played with both Darren and I, but strangely enough, you haven't really hit the hickories.
That's true.
Could you, before we get to Dr. Bern, because I think I'm going to ask him about this too. I think this is something, I find this all the time. Did you have a particular aversion to trying them? Were you scared of breaking them? Were you so wrapped up in your own universe that you really didn't care about Darren and I?
I don't know. I probably just should have asked to hit him. I wasn't necessarily, I'm not averse to him. I don't have hickories, but I have some older stuff that I'll play with. And, someday I guess the one thing I'm worried about is that I'm going to hit them and then I'm going to want them for myself.
There's nothing wrong with that.
In the city. I know, but I don't. I'm going to come home with a 100-year-old set of clubs, and my wife the eyes will roll so far back into her head, Mitch.
You know what you can do? Back. You'll get some. We'll get you a set, and you can store them at my house. And whenever you need to play them, I'll just ship them to you.
That's all right.
We'll have some kind of secret plan. We can bypass your wife,
right?
Which I don't recommend, really. But in this case. the only reason I asked, and I wasn't trying to shame you or anything, it's I find it really interesting that so many people have, there's a hesitancy, that's a good word, there's a hesitancy to try them.
Yeah.
And I know how much you love the game, and you're such a amazing, fun kind of guy who looks for the adventure in the game. And
it's true.
So obviously what this means is we have to meet up again and play.
It's very true. And I would like to do it on, you know, some sort of historically significant golf course as well.
Well,
so I can really tie it all together.
I think we have somebody who may be able to help us with that. Let's get to Dr. Bern. He's the head honcho at Bernacki Family Practice and Wellness Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That's his kind of main gig. I know that he spends a lot of his waking hours also as president of the Golf Heritage Society. He's also a member of an advisory board member, of the First Tee of Pittsburgh. So he's going older generation and younger generation in an attempt to cover as many people as he can. He actually joined us before on Talking Golf Getaways episode 150. If you want to listen to that, I highly recommend it. It's a great episode. There's a lot more info on the history of the GHS and Burns' history in the game and at the Golf Heritage Society. Quickly, I'm going to just a real quick bit of background. The Golf Collector Society, an international organization dedicated to preserving the treasures and history of the game. It was founded in 1970. This is a refresher course for you, Bern. Founded in 1970, the name was changed to Golf Heritage Society in 2018 to expand their mission, not just collecting, but to become a, quote, robust resource for golf historians, collectors, hickory golfers, researchers, and writers. In addition, now the Golf Heritage Society is increasing its outreach to encourage a greater mix of members. And I love this. I truly love this. Young people, juniors, women, minorities, etc. These are all groups that Byrne and his cohorts are trying to get really into the fold of appreciating the history of the game. You can find out more on the Golf Heritage Society on their fantastic website. It's a treasure trove of information for real. Golfheritage.org is where you can find that. And it is a pleasure to welcome once again Dr. Byrne Bernacki. Byrne, it's great to have you back with us.
Thank you, guys. I am delighted to be with you today.
Cool. Let's start off. I mentioned that if people want to learn about the Golf Heritage Society, they can listen to the earlier episode. We want to talk about two things today, as I said. One is the event that's coming up, and I want you to talk about that. Then we'll get into a few of the classic courses that you love and how people can just be aware that there's places that they can get on that'll connect them to the history of the game. Tell us about the 50th anniversary celebration and the national convention that you're about to undertake at the end of September, beginning of October, in Pennsylvania for the Golf Heritage Society.
Delighted. Thank you. Well, we're very excited. Last year we got shut down because of the COVID, but we're back. We used that year to make our program better. And we will be in the Doubletree Hotel in Monroeville, PA. That's about 10 miles east of Pittsburgh. We're sponsored by the Golf Auction. They're good friends. They're helping us out. But we, the Golf Heritage Society, are celebrating 50 years. It's exciting. We do a lot of things there. We play golf first. We'll have a couple of outings, a warm-up outing, and then a competitive outing. Then we'll have the golf auction. And we do a very wonderful thing. We expanded this year's program by a day. We always felt like we were just running around and going from here to here to here, meetings and classes and such. No real time to spend with your pals and the spouses and such. This year, we've expanded it by a day and a half. So we'll be able to have our presentations. This year, we're doing a golf art presentation. We have five notables in the world of golf art, and they will sit in a panel, and we'll spend a few hours with them really to pick their brains and learn what they're doing, why they're doing it, what inspires them. And we'll probably pull away to have some sidebar conversations from our young people that we're inviting for them to pick up some tips on golf art and appreciation of it and actually producing it. In addition to that, we're going to have a really cool series, something we have not done, the history of the sand wedge. And if you think about it, you know, from its early origins to its present, the darn things still don't work right sometimes. so we're gonna listen to the theory and see the designs, and some of it is now memorabilia, but we're gonna have a lot of fun with that. So we'll have our annual meeting, we'll elect our officers, we'll do a lot of great things. We have a get together that's a formal banquet where we'll induct four more members of our Hall of Fame. We're very excited about that. We have a keynote speaker who's a notable, Bob Ford, who recently retired from the head professional position at both the Oakmont Country Club, which people know, and the Seminole Country Club. So no one has ever been a head pro at two high-level organizations like that. And it turns out that Bob Ford, spending those many years in Western PA, has had the opportunity to get to know one Arnold Palmer very, very closely, as Bob was a young player and a young professional, was taken under the wing. So he will share some Arnold Palmer stories with us.
How great.
Yeah, yeah.
How great. What a fabulous thing to have Bob Ford there. Anybody who really knows anything about the game and its history is aware of who Bob Ford is and what he's done. That's great. That is really great.
And he's so excited to be with us, too. One, because we're the Golf Heritage Society, and two, because we asked them to talk a little bit about him, which he doesn't like to do, and a little bit about Arnold Palmer, which he really likes to do. So yeah. That's going to be fun. That's going to be fun.
Well, I also know, before we talk about Arnie a little more, I know that I'm very fond of one of the great writers and historians we have in the game, Stephen Proctor, who's the author of Monarch of the Greens. For those of you who haven't read Stephen's book, Monarch of the Greens, about young Tom Morris, go get it. Read it. It's unbelievable. And I was in communication with Stephen, and he told me he was going to be there. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it because of a conflict, but he's another guest that I think if people have time to listen to him, they'll be blown away by, you know, his knowledge and his expertise. So
sure.
That's another feather in your cap.
He is a great guy, and he's extremely knowledgeable. As a matter of fact, as we all know, the greatest asset of the Golf Heritage Society is the collective knowledge base of our members. Yeah, they own stuff, but they know where it came from and know the history of it in many, many cases, which makes these artifacts of golf come to life. Yeah. And that makes it just fascinating to listen to these folks. It's amazing.
Well, one of the things I've been at when it was the Golf Collector Society, I attended a couple meetings at Mid-Pines that they had. And I was absolutely amazed. I mean, because I'm a Hickory player and I've been around people who collect it and talked and, you know, bought clubs from them and that kind of stuff. I think people, again, have a misconception about people who are really kind of obsessive about Hickories and older clubs and the history behind them. But when you engage with people about all of it, it takes it to a whole different level, like you're saying.
You're exactly right, Mitch. What we're doing now is acknowledging those people who love to play Hickories with pre-19 Hickory clubs, smooth face with gutty balls, post-1900 from there to 1930-35. And then the people who wanted to play the transition club, those pirate tone clubs with the plastic covering that looks like wood, but it's really steel. And then the classic clubs, the Palmer, Nicklaus, Player, Trevino, Crenshaw era, where there's so many of those Persimmons and blade clubs. That's what I'm going to play at Latrobe Country Club when we play there for our competitive round. It's really tearing me up to not be able to play both in the Hickory event and the classics, but I'm on Arnold Palmer's club, you know. I gotta play some Arnold Palmer clubs, you know,
at Latrobe. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great added thing that the Golf Heritage Society that you're doing. And I love, and again, you're a humble guy, but under your leadership in the last few years, to expand it the way you have and to try these different things and have additions to what used to be just the Golf Collector Society meetings, which were fun. But I really believe this takes it to a whole different level. Talk to us about Latrobe. People can join the Golf Heritage Society. The event is September 29th till October 3rd. So if they want to join the Golf Heritage Society and come to, you know, Latrobe area and get a chance to play on Latrobe Country Club, Arnold Palmer's place, you know, everybody knows Latrobe. Can they do that? Is that something that they can do by joining the Golf Heritage Society?
People who are members have first crack at signing up for our event at the Latrobe Country Club on that Thursday, September 29. And we will have divisions, the Hickory Division, the Classics Division. And guess what? We love heritage golf. Bring your moderns, bring whatever you want to play because everyone is welcome in Heritage Golf. And we interact with each other. We talk about, how it feels to hit this club versus that club. And it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a great time. Yep.
Chris, does this sound at all interesting to you? Chris Byrne, Chris has a show called Driving Range Heroes that he does, and they talk a lot of equipment. You know, they're really on top of what the modern, and it's changing so fast, but Chris is really on top of it. This must sound pretty, let's say, enticing to you, Chris.
Yeah, to say the least. I love that there's different categories, because I do have a set of the old McGregor Tommy Armour Silver Scott irons.
Oh, you're sweet.
My pal Bill Bush, who hosts the show with me, he loves the older stuff. He's got a couple of different sets, and he kind of restored them for me. It's a whole thing. And just the fact that you can bring whatever you've got is awesome. It's so cool.
So there are folks that sponsor Hickory tournaments, and I was just at one and I had a blast, and I'll dress the part, you know, but it's really cool also to have a heritage event where people interact. We did one at Clearview in Ohio, the William Powell course, and Renee and I had this idea of why not play everything. A guy named Bob Glass brought the Hickory guys, and I invited people to bring whatever, and it was really a lot of fun. The rain didn't help us a lot, but under the tent when we were done playing, we had some wonderful interactions. So yeah, it's a lot of fun to talk every era.
Isn't that great? Well, this sounds like a fantastic event. You can go to golfheritage.org. You can sign up for the Golf Heritage Society. It's an unbelievable deal. It's $50 general membership for the year. If you want digital only, it's only $25. I don't know that there's a better deal in golf, Bern, than being able to access the information.
Of course, I'm prejudiced in my opinions, but you made a point that I'd like to follow up on. You know, COVID did a number on everyone, the people. Golf escaped a little bit because it's outdoors and we were able to sneak out and continue to goof off, you know, hit it and chase it. To be honest, the opportunity to go online and do some research on our website, 50 years worth of archives, and it really helped people. And I told, you know, you gave me a very nice compliment and I appreciate it. But the reality is there's a group of about 7 or 8 of us who work together to improve our communications with our opportunities, with our folks, our website, yes, but also now Facebook pages and Facebook groups, so we can start to interact with each other in subgroups. And the coolest thing yet is how we're using Facebook communication to come together in meetings, both for the board, but also for our members and notables. You mentioned Mr. Proctor. Well, he's been engaged to come onto one of our Zoom calls and talk about his book and what it took to put it together, and some things that you won't read between the pages there of insights that he developed while he was writing it. Now, for our members, that is an incredible attraction. That's the kind of stuff that we want to hear about. So the Zoom has changed it. I'm going to say one more thing about Zoom. I've been practicing with it, and I snuck up on a friend with a fabulous collection, Mike Beckerich, who owns the Classics of Golf, and I had him walk me through his game room. But he didn't know that I recorded it, and I asked his permission. I posted it on our website. And then I started calling older friends who can't play golf anymore. Guys that I've played Hickory with, we've trudged around, and they passed 75 and pushing 80. And they just basically said, I'm going to sort of watch you guys now. Well, guess what? I'm sending them Zoom calls about visits that we do. Last week, we did one on an Arnold Palmer collectibles from a gentleman, longtime member, Keith Campbell. He's an artist, and he's known Arnold Palmer for 40 years, and he followed him, and some of the collectibles he has tremendous story value. And I sent that to a couple of our old guys, and oh my gosh, the thank you notes that I got back from them. So we're reaching out to folks who may not be able to appreciate the game like they once did. We're doing it through the website and the research, but we're also doing it to share what we're doing today, sometimes live and sometimes recorded. Isn't that fun?
Yes, well, that's great. And I agree, you know, the lemon that we've gotten, turning it into the lemonade of things like Zoom calls and using technology to bring people together in a way that we didn't really before. It's a big plus, and kudos to all of you who are using it for good and for those kinds of purposes. It's great.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. Those fellows that I work with, some are a little bit further along than others, but everybody's willing to try. And now our biggest challenge, if I may say, is getting people who are not yet comfortable with technology, getting them some help, you know, to coach them through how to download Zoom onto your computer and then just tap the link and boom. Here I am, right in front of you. You can look at me, and I can look at you. And they're 85 years old and doing it and saying, "Man, this is cool."
I love it. All right, let's again, golfheritage.org. If you want to sign up, if you want to become a member, hit the National Convention 50th anniversary. It's certainly going to be worth it. I am sick to my stomach that I can't, but. All those of you that will be there, I'm sure I'll hear about it. Bern, I wanted to touch on a few of the courses. I know you mentioned Clearview. That was one of them that you and I wanted to discuss. Let's start there since you brought it up, the William Powell Golf Course. I have to tell you that while we all travel in the game and we're always learning about different things, when I asked you about some courses, classic courses, that you wanted to touch on. There were a couple that I had heard of, a couple that I've played, as I told you. We'll talk about those. But the other ones I hadn't. And when I was doing research on Clearview Golf Course in Canton, Ohio, my jaw literally dropped because I had never heard of Clearview. I did not know the history of Clearview. And as I was reading about it, I went, how is Clearview not on the Mount Rushmore of golf courses in America?
Mitch, it soon will be. I think the reason that it is not is because of the humility of William Powell and his family. These are folks, and the story goes that William Powell served in the he was a good golfer from Ohio, a high school player, dropped what he was doing to go fight in World War II. And, you know, people learned that he could play golf, and he played some golf over there in the what was left of the British Isles. And when he came home to the U.S. of A. after defending freedom and liberty, he was not able to get on to a golf course because of his dark skin. And he endeavored to purchase land and develop that land to create a golf course that we now call America's Golf Course because of that story. And his daughter, Renee, he had three children, William Jr., Renee, and Larry, all with his wife were dedicated to building that course. Renee learned how to play golf when she was three, went on the LPGA tour, only the second woman of color to do so. And Renee has been recognized and honored in many, many ways. She was our presenting speaker 2 years ago when we were near her in Cleveland. And she and I interacted, and I told her that our society lives for the opportunity to tell a good story and learn more and share with the world of golf. And she looked at me kind of funny and said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, let us help tell your story. We want to come out there and we want to play with the kind of clubs that were played there in 1946 when Dad built it. And Dad had clubs from 1926 when he was a younger person. So we went there and we played Hickory, Pyrotone, Classics, and Moderns in the same day and did the first Heritage Golf event on historic Clearview Golf Course. And I'm very proud of that. And Renee and I, we helped that to happen. So the story continues for Clearview that It has been serviced by Renee and her brother, Larry. Brother William passed away years ago. I don't know that story, but, Larry to this day is the head greenskeeper and he does a fabulous job. He's knowledgeable. And the family just received, the Old Tom Morris Award, which is the highest award given, by the superintendents. Society. And this year it was given to someone who appreciates good golf, good golf courses, a guy named Jim Nance. And Jim Nance was at Clearview a few weeks ago. And Renee brought out the family Powell trophy and took pictures with another architect who built Erin Hills up in Wisconsin for the U.S. Open, Mike Herdson, who's a Golf Heritage Society member of great notoriety and who will be inducted to our Hall of Fame during this weekend that we're together in convention. So I don't know what it is you're doing, but I'd sure like it, Mitch, if you'd change your plans and join me.
I'm going to start working behind the scenes and try to keep my family together. It's the only way I can put it.
Bring them
yeah, I just – so Clearview is a place, if you're anywhere near Canton, Ohio, that I think – at some point I'm making a pilgrimage there. It was the first integrated golf course in America. And it says a lot about Bill Powell and what he did. And again, I know who Renee Powell is, but I was not aware of the golf course. And that's something that we're so lucky to have for you to be telling this story, the whole thing. It was designated a National Historic Site in 2001. The quote that I read from him said, "The only color that matters is the color of the greens." Wow. And I just thought, you know, again, how we don't know exactly about it, but I'm really glad we're talking about it and that you're letting people know through the work you do. Let's move on to a couple other courses. Foxburg Country Club is another course that you wanted to talk about that people can play with great, great history. It was built in 1887, and it's the oldest course in the United States in continuous use.
Yeah, there was a gentleman named Fox who was a successful businessman. And those folks who remember their grade school American history remember that Western Pennsylvania was where oil was first discovered. And near that area, Mr. Fox had business success. And, you know, he built this little golf course because it was the in thing to do. If you had friends who came back over from the other side of the pond and brought these funny sticks called golf clubs. So they put together a few holes and then they did a little bit better than that. And they established a golf course, which continues in use today from 1887.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yes.
We're gonna jump to a course that was actually built before that. And that is a place when I saw this was on your list, you have no idea how wide the smile was, because the first place I ever hit a hickory shafted club was at Oakhurst Links in White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. I went on an outing and we got to play long nose play clubs, nine holes on that beautiful Oakhurst course with sheep down in the fairway and sand tees. And then after I had played there, I came back and started doing a lot of research on Oakhurst. And I actually, while I was there, got to say hi to Lewis Keller, who's the gentleman who, along with Bob Cupp, the great architect, who took what had been built in 1884 by six Scotsmen, who everybody thought they were crazy. They had no idea what these guys were doing out in the field hitting a ball. But Lewis Keller was the guy, a friend of Sam Snead's, who turned Oakhurst into a course that you could go and experience today and have that kind of great experience on a course built in 1884.
So, Mitch, you were right on point, my friend, with all points. Mr. Keller and Mr. Snead Mr. Sneed thought that Mr. Keller would be another Huckleberry when he would visit, and he found out Mr. Keller was a notable golfer. So yeah, they became golfers partners, and they worked the crowd and did well together. But White Sulphur Springs, it's about 8 miles above it up in the hills. And that golf course is owned by the Greenbrier. Right now it's not open for public use. We're trying to rescue it. And that's another desire of the Golf Heritage Society, to bring many people, the different powers that be and the interest groups within the game, to get together and make sure that America's oldest place of play, the contested medal, I don't know if you guys know this, but the Oakhurst medal was the first proven medal contested for on those hills in West Virginia, and it now resides in the USGA Museum.
Wow. So when you say that Oakhurst isn't open, what, where does it stand? I wasn't aware that it still wasn't open. Greenbrier owns the property?
Yes, it's been opened and not opened, and we've been there for the NHC National Hickory Championship, which is a gutty ball, smooth face clubs on the Oakhurst property. I want to say 20 out of the 24 times it's been played. No, it's probably 19 times. And it requires some upkeep for us to be able to play the game the way that it was played back then. So the course today is in need of restoration, and we would like very much to welcome folks to get involved through contacting us.
Great. Okay. Well, that's some more words. I'm sorry to hear that it wasn't open. I wasn't aware of that.
It will be. We're going to get it.
I have a feeling there's no way that it shouldn't be. Let's put it that way.
Thank you for that.
Okay. We'll move to another great course in Pittsburgh, a muni course, Schenley Park. 1902 is the date on that one. It's the only one inside the city limits, from what I can gather. It is operated by what is very close to your heart, the First Tee. And I love what it's the Bob O'Connor Golf Course, if that's what it's called now. And I love the nickname, the Bob. I just love the Bob.
If we only had an hour left in our podcast, I would get halfway there. Yeah. But the short version, it's a really, really cool story. And it was nicely summarized by Connor Lewis in the Society of Golf Historians. I want to guess episode 43, the golf club without a course. And the story goes that the property was part of Schenley Park, and a young lady who essentially left the country to go back to England, or to go to England, she was born here, said, keep the land and do something for the public. And that happened. The people of wealth, as you know, Pittsburgh was a industrial center, and the Carnegies and the Mellons and there's so many families of means were getting the bug about this game of golf that they heard about from different sources. So they needed to compete with the other big cities. So they built this little golf course. It actually was a few years before that. The clubhouse, I think, was dedicated in the 02, but the course was 97, I think, 1897. In any case, one day, and it was operated more or less by the people of means as their course. And one day someone showed up and says, no, this is public property. And interestingly enough, they were proven to be correct. And those people of means says, well, let's move a little further to the suburbs and create some private golf courses. And they did. They built the Pittsburgh Field Club in Fox Chapel, and the notable club called Oakmont Country Club was part of the spinoff of the story of Schenley Park. So Connor Lewis tells that in great detail and depth, and I think it's a wonderful story that he tells. So I was honored that he visited, and he couldn't figure out why there were two clubhouses, and then he understood that the Pittsburgh Golf Club exists today and does not have a golf course.
Wow. How cool. All right. So Schenley Park's another place, the Bob. There's another place that people can go
before,
play.
Mitch, before you leave there, we have to fast forward to 2020. So we knew that that building was pretty old, right? And we were trying to give kids first tee lessons in it. And as a physician and a public health person before medical school, we knew that we needed to get rid of the building and reinvent it. So we did. We built a new building, and it is an unbelievable facility for those kids. And it's also the pro shop and clubhouse for visiting the Schenley Park Golf Course, which we lovingly call the Bob after the mayor, who was often seen with his two sons trekking the golf course. The building is fabulous. It's the finest first tee facility in the country. And we will dedicate it. It's called the Arnold Palmer Learning Center, thanks to the largesse of the one Mr. Arnold Palmer for the loan of his name and approved by his family. Special thanks to them and their foundation. We will dedicate this building this coming September 10th in Mr. Palmer's honor, and we will recognize his golf success, but also his relevance in the business world and also in community support and also as an ambassador of the game of golf.
How great. That? What a power spot that is. You talk about being able to start a whole new generation of people who are in love with the game. That's great.
Amen.
Okay, let's move a couple more I want to mention before I let you go. One of them looks like a place I have not been, but looks unbelievable, where our traveling golfer friends can go. And that is a place called Bedford Springs Old Course, also in Pennsylvania. And this, in looking online and looking at pictures, this place looks truly, truly unbelievable.
Yeah, it had three contributing architects. The original, and I just did a free brain freeze there, but Tillinghast put the finishing touches, and Ross was there in the middle. Mm-hmm. So it has provenance for its architecture. And this is a golf course with the Bedford Springs Resort, which dates back to the late 1700s. It was a retreat from the D.C. area for presidents of the U.S. of A. And the Bedford Springs were felt to be health restoring. Well, it was the air and the water and just getting the heck away from it all. And that golf course is just fabulous. And, you know, it's strenuous to walk it. And even with a cart, when you just look at the vistas, it's a beautiful golf course. And the incredible thing is that it is so mature and has survived time because it's such a good course and great design. It's really worth a visit. It's 18 holes, and it will give you your money's worth. I assure you of that.
Well, that's great. And if I'm not mistaken, it's an Omni resort now. Is that right?
Yes. The Omni folks have done a incredible job of restoration. I have visited earlier this year for my second time the Mount Washington Hotel in New Hampshire. It's a must-see. It's restored. But what they did in Bedford Springs will knock your socks off. I mean, there's true American history there. There are people in the register that just amazing how many of our early Americans visited Bedford mm-hmm. Springs.
Well, this is very similar. A few weeks ago, my wife and I and our two friends who were down from Michigan went to Grove Park in North Carolina in Asheville. And it's the same thing. Omni took that over, and they have done the same thing. So I think when you say that the job they've done is fantastic, if it's anything like the Grove Park Inn and what they've done in Asheville, I can't wait to get there. Same kind of thing. Great history, you know, an amazing old Donald Ross golf course, and I don't know.
Not too many guarantees. Yeah, not too many guarantees, but I'd be real surprised if you didn't like the ambiance and the clubhouse and the golf course. I truly would. And one more shout out to the Omni. They operate the Homestead in Virginia, too. And I've not been on that golf course, but it's way high on my wish list.
Yeah, that makes two of us. Okay, we're going to wrap up with a place that I love. And people have heard about it lately because of the increased interest in shorter courses and different places you can play that are, let's say, more welcoming in terms of just how the game is played and enjoyed. That's Winter Park 9 in Florida outside of Orlando. I had a chance. I've been there twice. The place blew me away, completely blew me away. What people might not know, if they've just heard about it as some new short course in Orlando, is that the history at Winter Park is also, you know, worth noting and really fabulous and interesting when you get there to look at it.
It's true. I dragged my wife to Florida a year and a half ago when we were able to go down there right before the COVID hit. And I wanted to go to the PGA show, and I did. We also had the opportunity to visit Winter Park, and some friends were putting together the inaugural Hickory competition there. And of course, that was part of the fun. Well, my lovely wife, who's not the greatest fan of golf, although she enjoys the TV version and loves watching us dress up and have fun. Well, when she saw Winter Park and the little town, she's all about the history. So we walked, you know, that 1 mile stretch and where the train stop was that came from up north, and relating that to the old golf course and the redo. Wow, she was all in. It was great. We had a great time there.
Yeah, it's fabulous. Just a wonderful. We've talked about it a little on the show before, but if you haven't had a chance to play and enjoy Winter Park in the WP9, as we call it, you have to get there. And a shout out to Keith Reb and Riley Johns, who we've had Keith on the show. I've gotten to meet Keith Reb and Riley Johns, who put together Winter Park. And you won't find two better guys in the game. And they are doing great, great things. So, all right, Bern, all in all, a fantastic time talking to you between the Golf Heritage Society, the 50th anniversary of the Golf Heritage Society, the National Convention. Again, September 29th to October 3rd, go to golfheritage.org, sign up. Even if you can't go, just go and look around, and I guarantee you, if you're at all interested in the history of the game, you're going to love this website. I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing some of this with us, talking about courses, and I know we'll have you back again. If I won't be able to make it up there, I'm definitely going to have a talk with you after the event so we can catch up and find out how it all went. Really
appreciate
Mitch. You being here.
Yeah, send somebody up there to the trade show on that Saturday because it's open to the public. That's free. And they'll see about 100 yards of tables with golf memorabilia. If you need any golf equipment of any era, that's the place to come.
Well, I'll tell you, as I said, I've been to a couple golf collectors meetings, and one of the reasons that my wife probably is glad that I might not be coming to this thing is because you have no idea. If you haven't seen one of these trade shows, you have no idea. Chris, they'd have to put your hands around you and lock you up. That's how much great stuff there is there.
Yeah.
It's a kid in a candy store with no glass in the display case.
That's true. It's a good way to put it. All right. Again, golfheritage.org is the website. Thanks again to Dr. Bern Bernacki, not only for the Golf Heritage Society, but for, and I really mean this, for taking care of your community. That's the only way I can put it. For the family practice that you've had for years, for the way you interact with people, for the first tee, for all that stuff, it's pretty clear that you are a giver, my friend, and I think we're all grateful for you.
You're very kind, Mitch. It's been a pleasure to be with you and Chris, and I'd love to come back sometime.
Well, that'll happen. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. As always, go ahead and go on the socials. You can give us a good rating and try to grow the game the way we want to. We love talking about it, as you know by now, and we're happy to have you with us. We all have dreams in golf. Dr. Bern Bernanke dreams of connecting players of all ages to the great history and the treasures of the game. We hope you chase down your dreams as well. So long.